Brethren, Jesus Christ made an amazing declaration in one of his more contentious interactions with the Pharisees. That statement's found over in John chapter 8, verse 29. I'll just read it to you. It's a short verse, but again, it's an interesting statement. Jesus says, "And he who sent me is with me, and the Father has not left me alone, for I always do those things which please him." Brethren, do we always, or do we make it our aim to do those things that are pleasing to God? Is that our focal point? And as a sub-question we'll look at today, is there a difference between obeying God and pleasing God? Again, I want to explore this concept today, brethren. I want to explore what it means to be found pleasing him. And I also want to, again, take a look at, perhaps more importantly, how that mindset, how that concept will transform your life and your relationship with Jesus Christ, and put it on a different, at least a different perspective. So as we get going, brethren, again, let's make no mistake about it. The concept of pleasing our God is incumbent upon all Christians. That is something that is pressed upon us as followers of Christ. Paul saw it. Paul saw pleasing God as his ambition. He says that. He saw it as he pursued it. It was a pursuit of his. He further prayed that his friends would please God. And he puts a challenge in front of us as disciples of Christ that we too will please God. I do want to turn to this one. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 1. Again, Paul saw this as a critical underpinning, if you will, of a Christian life or a Christian walk. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, we'll start in verse 1. He says, "Finally, brethren, we urge and exhort you in the Lord Jesus that you should abound more and more, just as you have received from us how you ought to walk and to please God." Paul sees this as a fundamental component of a Christian walk. It is their life goal, their life's order is to set their minds to please their God. It's just very similar to what we just read of Christ when he says, "I always do those things that please him." Followers of Christ will have the same goal. We can't probably put the word "always" on there, but we will have that mindset that says, "I will please my God." I think it's interesting, and again, it's a different language that gets translated, but it's interesting to me still that Paul uses the word "urge" and "exhort." You know what the word "urge" means? It means to request, entreat, beg, and beseech. It's not just kind of like, "come on." I mean, it's an urging. And again, he says, "I urge and exhort," close together. You know what "exhort" means? This is the part I thought when I looked it up, I was like, that's kind of funny almost. One of the definitions anyway, the second one I believe, means to request, entreat, beg, and beseech. It's the same word, same definition, same kind of root. So he says it twice as a means to emphasize. Now the second one does add the idea of encouraging and strengthening, calling to one side. So it has a different connotation. But I think it's interesting that he uses two words here that arguably mean very similar things. I think it's there to drive home the point. And as he says, this is in the Lord. That is where our strength comes from. And when we set our mind to please our God, make no mistake about it, it will be in the power of the Lord that we're able to do that, because we can't do it otherwise. And again, that will come out as we go along. He also uses two other words that, again, I don't want to leave here without unpacking a little bit. He says abound more and more. Again, this idea of, it's like, okay, I'm going to use one thing and then I'm going to add on to that. Abounding means to exceed in fixed number, to be left over, to overflow. You get the idea that he's not just saying cross the finish line or just step over and, you know, collapse and get the easy chair, whatever. More and more, something you ever increase in. There is no end to that. And again, we'll talk about that as we go along. He says more to a greater degree. Paul essentially has challenged all of us, all Christians throughout time. He has urged us, he has exhorted us to abound more and more to please our God. There are several points that can be made in favor of pleasing God as a guiding principle for Christian behavior. First, it is a radical concept. It strikes at the very root of our discipleship and challenges the reality of our profession. And it shifts us away from a minimalistic perspective. It really causes us to ask the question, how can we claim to know and love our God if we do not seek to please Him? Secondly, it is a flexible principle. It will rescue us from the rigidities of Christian Phariseeism, which tries to reduce morality to a list of do's and don'ts. And yet again, even with that, it's still flexible, and it teaches us in that flexibility that we still need instructions, we still need the commands, we still need the do's and don'ts. But again, we go beyond the do's and don'ts, which again can lead us into, well, I did it right. And again, we'll talk about that. Thirdly, this principle is progressive. And I know it's a bad word these days, but it means something else than what we have come to know, it seems like. But again, it's just progressive. If our goal is to perfectly please our God, we shall never be able to claim that we've attained it. Think about it. It's like, that's what I mean. It's wherever you are in your Christian life and in your walk and your evolution, if you want to use that, or, you know, transformation, which would be more biblical, I suppose, it still applies. And that's why it's progressive. This could be your first day here, and it can still apply to you. Fourthly, this principle is comprehensive. Brethren, this principle marshals together every discipline of discipleship there is. It sets a mind and a state of being that always motivates you to seek that mind of Christ. That's why I think it's a fundamental tenet. I think that's why when you see it, you'll see Paul repeatedly going back to this theme over and over and over. So brethren, how do we start this radical, flexible, progressive, and comprehensive journey of pleasing God? We begin to get the answer over in Ephesians chapter 5. I do want to turn to this one. I'm going to try to read as many as I can today, but I do want to look at this one. Ephesians chapter 5. We'll start in verse 1. Because he's going to go on. He's going to list several, I didn't count them up, I would guess 8, 9, 10, different elements here, all of which have this concept of the more and more, and have this idea again of being progressive and pleasing our God in these things. Some of them are worded as negative or positive approbations, and some are worded as negative prohibitions. But still, we get this idea. We won't read them all today, but I love verse 1. Ephesians chapter 5, just verse 1. He says, therefore, be imitators of God as dear children. Just the idea of, okay, imitate God. Again, show up the first day. You can set your mind to please your God, and I'm going to try to imitate Him. And you could be at this for 50 years and still have that idea that I will please Him. He goes on to talk about several again. He urges and exhorts us to abound more and more throughout these, like foolish talking, unclean, are you an unclean person? Walking in love, giving of thanks. All of these are like lead-ins or examples of pleasing our God. I want to drop down to verse 7, because this is sort of the section I wanted to read anyway. So verse 7 says, therefore, do not be partakers with them, for you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. That is something we must do. We must find out what is acceptable to the Lord. I think it's interesting because, again, finding out is, for those who are in school, it's like we learned so many Greek words. For some reason, this is the one that sort of I remembered. Dokimazo. I don't know why I remember that, but I do. But it's the word that commonly applies to metals, where you stress the metal. It means to explore, investigate, and ascertain and discern. Is it what it's intended to be? Again, it's not a passive activity. You don't get the idea that you just kind of wait there until you get some inspiration. It is finding out, it is searching and exploring and investigating what is acceptable. When you hear the word acceptable, what comes to mind? I know what came to my mind. I guess it'll do. That's what that's acceptable. I got a C. The dictionary even defines it that way. They say satisfactory, but not superior, passable. The Greek word used here means fully agreeable, well-pleasing. Paul's saying, explore, investigate, ascertain, and discern what is well-pleasing to our God. It is a duty of a Christian to do so. And if you notice, I actually, sometimes when I see parenthetical statements, I like to go back and read the sentence without that in there. Verse 9 is a parenthetical insert, if you will. Without that, it says, walk as children of light, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. Brethren, let's make the point before we leave this verse. Children of light will find out. They will explore and investigate and discern what is fully agreeable and well-pleasing to our God. That is what children of light do. And it's not the point today, but I think it's important to point out, Paul doesn't say you once walked in darkness here. You once were surrounded by darkness. He says you were darkness. Now you are light. Brethren, as children of light, it is incumbent upon us to seek out what is pleasing to our God. So what's the process whereby we may find out what is acceptable to God? Good thing is, Bible's great at this. We don't have to guess. Paul's already given us a bit of a clue with the more and more concept. But he gives us more details over in Romans. So let's turn over real quick to Romans chapter 12. We'll just read two verses. Some of these you might not need to turn to. It's Romans 12, 1 and 2. It might be a memory verse for you. Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2 says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Again, the term acceptable, dokimazo, it's more than just, it's okay, it's acceptable. And do not be conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Again, prove, explore, investigate, and ascertain, discern. It's not an act, a passive activity. It's an active one. Acceptable does mean, again, fully agreeable, well-pleasing. These are the same words used. The difference here is he expands on it a little bit. Again, in Thessalonians, he says more and more. Here he says through the renewing of your mind. Brethren, it is done through the persistent and relentless renewing of your mind. It is an ongoing, ever-churning activity within the follower of Christ. You have to continually renew your understanding of God and His purpose for your life. It's part of what we are. And Paul says it is purposeful. It is a decision that we set our minds to do this, to look into God's law, to look into His ways and see what is pleasing. And again, we'll expand on that a little bit because, again, one of the questions we're going to ask is keeping the law pleasing or the same as pleasing God. Yes, it is pleasing, by the way, but there's more to it. A renewed mind, a mind dispositioned to obey God is the best preparation for discerning what is pleasing to Him. It's essentially what Paul's saying in here. A renewed mind, it doesn't in itself fix it, but it orients you to God. And causes you to start saying, okay, I want to know what pleases you. And that happens over and over and over. On the other hand, a mind in love with the fashions and follies of this world is ill-suited to appreciate the arguments for pleasing God. It's sort of a choice we get. Do we turn and orient our life toward God and seeking Him and pleasing Him? Or do we let this world distract us and set our intentions and our love and our affairs on this world? Back to Ephesians. In fact, I'll just summarize. You don't have to turn back there. But it's an interesting concept to read what we just read in Ephesians. Come back and read the rest of it. Because Paul goes on to give some great practical ways that this all can transpire in the life of a Christian. It can manifest itself as Christians. And he goes, again, I just summarize it, sort of putting my own labels to it. But would it be pleasing to God? Because again, and he covers this in verse 12 through 14. Is it pleasing to God when you choose to partner with Him to become light? Remember we said Paul's metaphor is you are light now. Walk accordingly. Verse 12 through 14, essentially you could summarize that saying, partner with Him, agree with Him, join Him in that cause. Verses 15 through 18, would it please God to make good use of your time on this earth? your days are numbered. I don't know what they are. Everyone's are. Is it pleasing to God to make the most use of that time or to constantly be putting off doing the right thing, pushing a can down the road, not making commitments early in life? Youth is some of the best time to do some of that. I would argue it is pleasing. And then finally in this section, but again, Paul, it's just, there's so much rich information here. Paul, would it be pleasing to God when you manifest those results of a spirit-filled life? And he highlights four different ways that can be done. And this is in verses 19 through 21. Manifesting it in your fellowship. He words it this way, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. That's a worship through our fellowship. Again, that's a phenomenal way we can please our God. So fellowship, worship directly, where he says singing and making melody to the Lord in your heart. Gratitude, always and everything giving thanks in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, Father and Son, and submission. Those are four ways he highlights where we can manifest this outward. Really, it's sort of the first two is like agreeing with God that I want to partner with you. I want to become like. That's sort of introspection. And then, again, we learn through that to make good use of our time on this earth. And then we find ways to manifest it and share it and spread that. And again, he just gives four examples, but there are plenty of others. Pleasing God is not a part-time or a passive activity. Brethren, it is a lifelong engagement and a persistent endeavor. Paul likens it unto being a soldier engaged in warfare. And again, I'll read this one to you. It's fairly short and I think most will be familiar with it. But again, he likens this to war. I think that's interesting because again, we all know we have a battle around us. But it's over in 2 Timothy chapter 2 verses 3 through 4 for note takers. He says, you therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engaging in warfare entangles himself in the affairs of this life that he may please him who has enlisted him as a soldier. Brethren, we can't let this world, we can't get so entangled in this that we don't fight the fight that we have been enlisted in. We have been enlisted as soldiers in the army of God, so to speak, as spiritual soldiers. And we cannot let the, you know, a physical soldier doesn't like to sit on a battlefield. Nobody wants him wondering, you know, do I have enough money in the bank account to pay next month's mortgage when bullets are flying? No, I mean, there's a singular focus to it. And so too with our Christian life and our desire that we may please him who has enlisted us. That is a desire and we are, make no mistake about it, we all are enlisted. And we need to make it our aim and our goal, again, that singularly, if you will, to please him. Pleasing God, or the pleasing things to God, are acted out. We've highlighted that a few times. But they're manifested outwards. Remember Christ said, I always do those things that please him. We have a similar admonition from John. And I would like to turn to this one. 1 John chapter 3. Verse 22. Because just like Christ went before us in many things, we are to follow in his steps. And really in almost all things. 1 John chapter 3 verse 22. And whatsoever we ask, we receive of him because we keep his commandments and do those things that are pleasing in his sight. Now I don't know what you read. I know what I read when I hear keeping the commandments. I think, okay, I obey them. Cool. This word keep here means much more than just obedience. It means to possess, to keep prisoner, to watch guard, to keep it from escaping. Brethren, we keep those commands. We hold them dear and we don't in any way, nothing I say today wants to diminish in any possible way the commandments of God. We hold them dear. And again, keep them prisoner, watch them, keep a guard on them, don't let them escape. But we have to then go out and do the commandments, do those things based upon what we know. We pick up and we go do things that are pleasing in his sight. And that's essentially what verse 22 is telling us. We find out through the renewing of our minds how to manifest what we know God's truth is. And that's what God says is pleasing to him. We find those things out and we do them. We act them out. Paul expands on this idea. Let's turn over to Colossians chapter 1. He expands on the idea of keeping and doing in a way that I think is actually very instructive for us when we consider how do we do those things? What does it mean to go on and do those things? He had just received good news of the Colossian faith here. So we're going to pick it up in verse 9. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 9. He says, "For this cause, we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to desire that you might be filled with the knowledge of his will, with all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing." Think about that. Paul's prayer is that you would have knowledge. Yes, commandments. Yes, we have to know the precepts. Yes, we must discover those things. But filled with knowledge and wisdom and understanding that you may walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing. It's almost like that's where we're supposed to go. To have that mindset that what Christ did for you, what we're going to observe in a couple weeks, should drive us to desire to please him. Being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. Again, you get this idea of more and more. Renewing of the mind. Everything in this, every concept here is about increasing, just repeatedly going back and renewing it and doing it time and again and again. Brethren, have you ever said, and I know you have, because I've grown up in the church and I've said it how many times? I know I've heard it said, there's no law against, fill it out, fill in the blank, whatever it is you want to say, think, do, whatever it is you just said. There's no law. There's nothing that says I can't. And then again, fill in the blank. What's wrong? I hear this one a lot. What's wrong with? And again, I'm not even here to fill in the blanks. I imagine we all, again, if you focus on it, you'll hear yourself saying that in your head a lot. I did after I was putting this together. Like, oh, that's one of those times you want to bring the hypocrite sign up. There's nothing, again, there's nothing that says I can't. And all these sort of exceptions we start creating that say, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with, and again, typically a lot of times we hear that about Sabbath. There's nothing wrong with playing video games on the Sabbath. Okay, there's no command. Brethren, if we are only asking the question, is it lawful for me? We have a limited view of God's intention for our lives. If that's all we're asking, then we are limiting what God intended for us. And that's a bit of a hard piece of truth, I suppose. But brethren, it is true. I have a challenge for us. Do you want to change your whole perspective and your relationship with Christ? Instead of asking, is it lawful? Ask if it pleases God. It's just a different way to look at the same dynamics you're going through anyway. And again, just because of the time of year it is, it's a bit of an interesting, less than 30-day challenge, I guess. But between here and Passover, every time something, you do something, you think something, you say something, ask that question differently. There's nothing wrong with me getting mad because X and Y and Z happened. Okay, maybe. Maybe you have been so wrong, anger's justified. But is it pleasing to God? Does your response please your God? Just jotted down a few examples for us to consider. How about how you spoke to your spouse this morning? Lawful or pleasing? What about what you thought about your spouse this morning? Lawful or pleasing? What about how you think about a person sitting across the room right now? Somebody maybe you had a little tiff with. Justified lawful or is it pleasing to God? Is your attitude toward your brother and sister pleasing to God? Person may not even know you think it. What about this? This is one of my favorite. What about prayer life? Are you required to pray? I would argue, yeah. I mean, I don't know the thou shalt pray kind of command, but clearly it is part of a Christian life and a Christian walk to talk to God. I don't know how you don't have a relationship or have a relationship with God if you don't talk to Him. So yeah, I think we could probably all agree. Yes, we're required to pray. Are you required to pray 2 or 3 times a day? No. I mean, there's biblical examples of that. There's the morning and evening oblations. But it's not a requirement. But would it please God if you did? I think it would. I think God kind of wants to hear from us. That used to be my parting comment to my daughter every night. It's like, don't forget your prayers. God wants to hear from you. Anyway, again, no law, but would it be pleasing to Him? In your prayer life, are you required to talk about your most intimate thoughts? Again, I think as you evolve in a Christian life, that's going to naturally happen. But no, I mean, there's no biblical edict, thou shalt X. And so you can say, well, no, there's nothing that says I have to do that. But again, would it please God if you did? He already knows them. He already knows what you're thinking, saying, feeling all the emotions deeper than you do. Would it be pleasing to God if you just talked Him over with Him in the quiet time of your prayer, things that you won't tell another person? I think it would. Are you required to make intercessory prayer for others? No. But would it please God if you did? And you could go on and on just with prayer. What about your charity? What about giving? Are you required to give? Yeah. I think, again, as a Christian, you are required to give. We know we pay tithes. That's different to me. That's a bill. You pay it. You owe it. But are we required to give? Yeah, I'd say we are. But brethren, see, it's not the giver. It's the cheerful giver that God appreciates and pleases your God. It's the cheerful one. Because you can give for all sorts of reasons. You can give for hatred. You have to look no further than, I don't know, I'll make up a number. 70-80% of political donations are probably given out of hatred of the other person or somebody else. You can give for very, very bad reasons. But it's a cheerful giver. What about truthfulness? Last example I have. Are you required to speak the truth? Yes. Even when it hurts, you are required to speak the truth. But brethren, it's not speaking the truth or truth speaking that pleases our God as much as speaking the truth in love, which is what we're told to do. See, because you can speak the truth for a whole lot of different reasons. Again, you can speak the truth out of hatred. You can speak the truth in anger. You can speak the truth to manipulate somebody. But God says it's speaking truth in love that is pleasing to Him. We have, again, just one quick example, Satan. Satan spoke truth, but it was for the purpose of deceiving. It was for a very bad reason, which did not please God. And that's one of those areas, that's just one I've been exposed to, where it's like, well, it's the truth, and we say that as somehow justifying how we just destroyed somebody because we spoke truth. We do that to our spouses more than anybody, and we do that to our children. I know somebody right now is doing it to their child, and it's horrible. It's sad to hear anyway. They probably are right, but they're damaging somebody, and I don't, God be the judge, but I don't think that's pleasing Him just because you spoke truth. But we justify our actions by doing that because, well, after all, it's truth. Brethren, pleasing God tentacles into all aspects of your Christian life. To the Corinthians, Paul wrote this. Again, we use these scriptures a lot of time for other messages. But I think it's interesting to just kind of, in this light, look back and look at where Paul was coming from. Because he says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. He's point blank saying, I can do things with, by law, I have a right. But if it's not helpful, I'm not going to do it. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Do what we do. If we're, again, this is what I'm saying. If we just look at, well, it's lawful, and then we can do horrible damage, and it's not pleasing to our God. If it's helpful and edifying, then yes. And that is the aim of a Christian. He goes on after saying that to give some examples. One example, and this is where we usually go, eating meat sold in markets. Again, that was an issue they had then. We don't have that typically today. But what about what we do on the Sabbath? Okay, is it lawful? Yeah. Does it edify? Does it help? That's what's pleasing to God. Earlier in Corinthians, Paul highlights lawful things that could be misused. And I think, again, there's just an interesting things that are okay and good and right. But if you distort it and you misuse it, then it's not pleasing to God. Again, I'll just read this for note takers. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12. Again, he rephrases or restates. It says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Again, he's basically saying, yeah, because he goes on to discuss foods and sexual matters. They're lawful. There are great lawful uses for both those, including alcohol. It's a great thing. But he says, I will not be brought under the power of any. All of that can be misused to the point where it is not pleasing to our God. All of it. So what about us? Again, Paul just uses two examples, but what about our entertainment choices? What about the clothing we wear? What about the video games we're willing to play? The internet sites we're able to visit? Again, it tentacles into every part of your Christian life. That's why, again, it's so transformative to say, stop saying, well, there's nothing wrong with playing this video game. There's nothing wrong with watching that movie. And asking, would this please God? If he does know you're doing it, but is this pleasing God? It changes it. And again, no matter what, we have to make sure we don't let those things own us. Because some of those things, especially food and drink and sexual matter, that's probably why Paul brings this up, they can control you. And they can very easily take those things and become very not pleasing to our God. We are called as Christians to seek out, to explore, to ascertain, to discern the things that are pleasing to God. And brethren, we are called to do them. We are called and chosen, if you will, and we need to be faithful at acting them out in life. Asking yourself if something is lawful is absolutely necessary. Asking yourself if the same thing is pleasing to God is transformative.